feel sort of blessed by the former presentation by Peter. I don't know how you feel about castles, but I'm also very much into castles. I'll show castles at the end of my presentation. I was asked by Camila to talk about shanty towns and gated communities and to show a few of my projects in cities. And at the beginning of my presentation, I show three projects in cities, one in Istanbul, the other one in Liverpool, and the third one in Caracas, Venezuela. And at the end, I will show a research which I have done in the cities like Caracas and Pristina, Tirana, and so forth. Why I'm interested in shanty towns and gated communities, for the simple reason that maybe 5 or even 8 years ago, I found out that the two fastest growing forms in cities today, if you look at the whole world, are shanty towns and gated communities. They are bottom-up initiative, and they are about private space, not public space. So, in a way, it's very evident to me that public space is on the way out and private initiative and private space is on the way in, and it gains attention, and in a way, you can see it very very well in cities that we consider cities in crisis, maybe also the West Bank region or Caracas, Latin American cities. But I think that cities in crisis have one advantage, and this is that they are moving very fast, and Europe is moving much slower. So in a way, you can see the cities in crisis as a picture book of what we will face sooner or later, and one of them is castles. This is the project that I made in Istanbul, biennial, in 2003. I was invited by Dan Cameron. The title of biennial was Poetic Justice. And I decided from the very beginning just to make an intervention in the private space, not public space. So I never, when I make intervention in city, I don't work in public space. So I asked the organizers to find a private home with a flat roof where residents want to upgrade their house for another floor. And they found it, and we, with the money from the biennial, we built the roof. And later on, at the time, during the time of the exhibition, there was a blue plastic curtain that encircled the space and people used it. But soon afterwards, half a year later, residents built their apartment under the roof. And this is how it looks from far away. So in a way, it was a purely experiment, but it worked really well. And I like the fact that I don't do an art which is there to, you know, that you have to look at, I don't know, 10 years or so. But it's somehow a temporary project that can eventually become permanent. And I thought it was actually beautiful that a private family took care of the public project, but also we diverted money from art to the real life, and no one had any problems with it. Also, this didn't happen in the center of the city, but on the outskirts of the city. So there were a lot of preconceived ideas that I thought people would object, but everything worked very well. This is the project that I made for the Liverpool Biennial in 2004, and actually it happened in the same high-rise, in the same situation the Superflix were talking at the first presentation. This is the tower block. It's called the Biscom House Tower Block, and actually Liverpool has a very funny, it's a sort of a very experimental city. It's a shrinking city, which means it lost a lot of population. And in the 1960s, they had huge slums. that were the biggest slums in Europe, but they were deconstructed, and instead of a slum, today you have a big park. The population was rehoused in social housing, which they called tower blocks. Out of 72 tower blocks, only 12 remain today, and those that remain are getting privatized. So also Liverpool is sort of fantastic because also it's not only about private space, like there is also a development which is called Paradise Street in the very center of the city, where the city will give private security the power to control the region. And they think if it will work well, then the city can apply it on a larger scale. So the city today is like the second biggest city, the second city in the world that has the biggest numbers of security cameras. So it's a combination of security and private interests that really rule the city. This is how I felt. So I said, okay, so let's make a point of this. Let's make a point that the social state is disintegrating in Liverpool, and we propose to build a balcony with a wind turbine on one of the tower blocks. I went there, discussed it with residents, and it eventually happened. I'll show you. This is the caretaker, the guy who gave the wind turbine. The wind turbine is a product from the Glasgow company, Windsail, and what it does, it actually gets electricity directly into your private electrical grid, so you pay like one third less electricity. The balcony was installed to serve two families, and they got this electrical the electrical power and empowerment, if you want. This is the third project. It's a dry toilet that I built in Caracas, Venezuela. I was invited to Caracas by the Caracas Space Project, which was a project by the German Cultural Foundation. And I stayed there half a year. It was a lot of people that were invited, artists, architects, and so forth. The idea was to research the informal city of Caracas as something that we have to, that sort of the formal civilization, or let's say regulated countries, need to know, because half of the population in the world live like this. So it was sort of an experiment, and people did different things. I worked together with an Israeli architect, Lia Tesako, and one of the things that we did, we went directly into the barriers, and of course, first of all, we were taken by this incredible informal architecture, but second, we found out that the real problem is the water and the lack of electricity. So we built, you can see this, the white sink in the middle, it's a dry toilet. I'll show some of the close-ups. Okay, we had, of course, a lot of discussions, and it was actually interesting because the water, we found out, is the biggest problem in the barrios. Where we made a project, people don't have access to running water at all. And what is more important, like lower regions, when they get the water, they get it just twice per week for a few hours per day. So this was something that really caught their attention, and we designed with the help of I didn't think about the dry toilet myself. This was a design from some Mexican initiative. We built this with the help of the Ministry of Ecology and Environment from Venezuela, but also we empowered the local community to build more of them, so they know how to do it. In a way, we just delegated the knowledge to them. The dry toilet, it works like this. All the urine and the hard stuff is diverted separately. They both, urine becomes fertilizer and the hard stuff becomes the soil. So it's sort of like a nice loop. This is the owner of the house. This is, of course, all the barrios are built illegally. So this is the territory of Raquel, who of course didn't have the toilets at all before we built it there. This is inauguration day of the community. Okay, let's move ahead. Now I talk a little bit about my research, and I will actually show how architecture and the city, and how the cities look after the collapse of the modernist project, and which I also call social state. We basically look at two cities, one is Caracas, and then the cities from the West Balkan area, Pristina, Tirana, and Belgrade. But first, Caracas. Caracas is a divided city. It's actually what you see is in the middle you have former city, on the outskirts you have barrios. Barrios is an illegal city, an informal city as they call it. And the former city and the informal city are really in conflict with each other, and they have completely different set of values. What was very interesting when we were there, the former city was collapsing because the former economy was collapsing. On another side, the informal city was blossoming and it was growing fast. So we had a combination of fast growing and fast shrinking city at the same time. This is just an illustration how the maps of Caracas looked like 10 years ago. Maybe 15 years ago, barrios were not even drawn on the city plans. They were considered wild nature, or if they were drawn as green color, as parks, like maybe wild nature. When my family came to visit me in Caracas, they went to the tourist office and they got maps which didn't show the barrios at all, which was sort of hilarious because more than half of the city you can see everywhere is barrios because they are on the hills. But at the same time, the former city, as I said, was collapsing and it was becoming sort of modern ruin, arrested in time and really dissolving. Oversized billboards were left empty. At the same time, we could see the informal economy blossoming and actually saving the city. And this is actually the most extreme street selling that I have seen. Street sellers in very highways, and eventually you can buy everything on the during traffic jam, driving back home. So it's a sort of extreme temporary informal economy. But also what was very important is that informal economy was actually saving the city. The former big department stores were hiring street sellers to hawk their goods on the highways and streets of Caracas. As for the structure of the barrios, you can see it's first of thing that you see it's not formal, then second thing, what I have shown in the map before, it's an organic form that grows all the time, and it's really in temporary condition. People who are now mapping the city have big problems how to pin this temporary condition down. And of course there is no, maybe just also to show how the city actually, the barriers are informal, spaces that invade the space, the sort of considered public space of the city inside, but also the public space that is considered public space of the state on the outskirts. So everyone talks about invasions. So these are invasions. The close up of an invasion, another close up. It's sort of evident that there is no public space because there is no representation of the state. Also, the state doesn't give much help with the with the energy infrastructure, with the power, like water and electricity. So this is a typical view of a barrio alley, and which is considered public, but it's actually not really public. It can at any time become a private space. So we have a public space that is at all times privately negotiated. And of course there is no square that we could call a public space. Of course the energy infrastructure is also very important, meaning the breakdown of energy infrastructure. And like 90% of people in the barrios, they steal electricity from the power grid. And security in the barrios is as important as you see here all the walls in decorations, if I can say so, walls, as in the former city. So basically what we see is the collapse of the social state and the informal economy and informal aesthetics actually really takes ground and they move the city. Now I'll show you a few pics from Belgrade, Pristina and Tirana, and it's actually a new project I'm working on, which is called Europe Lost and Found, and which will be shown in 2007 in Ljubljana Museum, but also in the WKB in Stuttgart. And we did, with my friends, I did some research there, and it's sort of fantastic to see how the modernism in ex-Yugoslavia and also in Tirana collapsed. But first of all, I do believe that modernism was a huge project not only in the ex-socialist countries in the East, but also in the West. And basically it was a top-down organization, which had like a slogan, equality and justice for all, somehow following the slogan of French Revolution, Égalité, Fraternité, Unité. When the social state collapses, the multicultural society also collapses. And the ideal community that in the time of modernism housed 10,000 residents, today shrank to 10 families in one building, which I call urban villa. I'll show some of the pics afterwards. So what you saw before was New Belgrade, and no, New Zagreb, but here when you went to New Belgrade, we could actually see the dereliction of modernism sort of accelerated. What we see in Belgrade is actually the total neglect of public spaces that are taken over by informal markets, and the buildings themselves, they become ghettos. Basically, Chinese population moves into these tower blocks. Population that was there before moved, let's say, to the west, to Vienna. And it's sort of a rural, also the influx of rural population into these blocks that bring, again, informal economy and also informality of building. We'll see some of the pics. Basically, this is a pic from an image from Pristina, and when you come to Pristina and in Tirana, what you see is just an amazing, very beautiful development in construction. Constructions are everywhere. And what is very important to know is that all development is private, and mostly it gets money from informal economy. You must know that Kosovo, for instance, today is governed by three governments, Kosovo, Serb, and its UN protectorate, which means no one rules. And this is why people themselves, they build and they take care of their destiny and the future. And of course, there is no future. Everything has to be now. But I will show you now what an addition means in Belgrade. Belgrade is still a regulated city, right? But you know what an addition means, you will see now. This is an original site, and this is an attempt of an addition to this original site, and this is the final product. The original house you see is embedded in the under the huge thing, it's called the mushroom architecture. And what you see also is the the new form of ideal coexistence. Before, in modernism, we had communities of 10,000 people, but now you have two communities of maybe 10 or 15 families that share equal value systems. It can be money or otherwise. And this is again another famous picture from Belgrade. Belgrade in the 1990s became a big city in crisis, and it also became a fast-growing city because of the many people from the rural areas that landed on the city. They fought it invasions, like in Caracas, invasion to the city, to the suburbia, and also to the inner city. You have to know that all the rooftops in ex-Yugoslavia were considered public ownership, but of course people just invaded them at this time. What is very funny about this picture is that it actually brings aesthetics of the rural areas into the city, and it sort of goes against the urban aesthetics. They say, you know, we informal population, we have our own aesthetics, which is great, and we will not conform to the urbanities, to the urban visual qualities. They also had a garden over there. Actually, this is it's a very nice development with these houses. At the end, like 2 years ago, the city thought it's just a little bit too much to look at these stupid houses on top of in the center of the city. So they wanted to put them down, but of course in the Balkan you can always negotiate. So the owners just built a huge wall in front of the houses, and they even made houses bigger, so of course they're still there. This is Tirana. This is actually also the same idea, to build a private city on top of already existing city. And I'll show just a few more pics from Tirana. This is Tirana, how you build, so what I call edit on city, you actually reuse the city. You don't, like modernism, you don't wipe the city away. You reuse it and you make the best of it for you. So here is the informal market, which builds onto the streets. This is, I believe, Duras. This is a picture from Tirana, again, a very beautiful presentation of edit on city. But now we'll just look very briefly at what kind of aesthetics this new attitude brings. These are the values of new houses. This, I believe, is from Skopje, actually. The houses are built with architects, but architects don't have a big role there. They have to do what the owner desires, and it's the owner's personal taste that really matters. So what the product is a hybrid, and it's kitsch. When it's really kitschy, then this is the best house you can have, your dream house. What is also very interesting is that there is no one style, but there are many styles. This is Orientalism. Pristina, another beautiful example of Orientalism. Modernism, again, accentuate it as much as you can, then it becomes kitsch, then it's super. Then, again, very beautiful building. More like modernism, right? Again, Pristina, this is the house out of an American catalog. And it's located in the center of Pristina, which is called Peyton Place. These buildings are about the that Peter was talking about, but it's already realized, of urban police community now in the Western Balkans. And this is a slide of my friend Srđan Ivanović Weiss, and it actually says, it's from Belgrade, it says that all styles are equally important, there is no hierarchy, it is like on an individual basis an equal right. So actually this left building high tech is the same value as the building on the right, which will become Orientalist style, you can see it. Now to the mapping, because there is something about when I talk about the cities in crisis, people say, oh, it really doesn't concern us. But I think it concerns us very much in Europe. And I'll show just a few examples of mapping the cities. This one is Tirana, and probably you all know about the project that was initiated by their mayor Edi Rama. The city was somehow depressed and all the buildings were drab, gray and so forth. They initiated a project which is modeling of the city facades, and after they started it, they even gave a referendum to the people, so people said yes, we like this. So it was a sort of very low budget, building on, you know, the optimism in the society. But it was more than this, it was like a mapping of a new values of a new society. What you see is that the carving doesn't follow the structure of architecture. It doesn't enhance the frames, the doorway, the roof and so forth, but it puts another logic on top. I heard that he made this Annelies alive. He's not naive, he knows what he's doing. He said, these facades are not a lipstick or a dress, they are organs. And more than this, not only many houses are painted in this style, but also the new development appropriated the style. So this is a very new building which is painted in the same style. So actually I like this, the Escher thing. It's sort of Euclidean geometry put on a building. I mean, what kind of logic is this? Are we now in this upside down world? And which brings the West Bank to the maps of that were initiated by Eyal Weizman, an Israeli architect who made a mapping project that examined law violations and human rights abuses committed in the West Bank by architects and planners. And he calls the maps the dynamic maps, because like in the barrios, the territory is at all times negotiated, and it changes all the time. So you have zones, you don't have fixed territories, but you have zones, zone A, B, and C, and really zone B by the some kind of sharing of power, and zone C by Palestinians. What you see here is an image that shows Palestinian city and West Bank Jewish settlement in very close proximity. This is also what I believe is waiting for European Union. And so this is sort of a fantastic invention from the West Bank. It's called Ring Roads. It separates the traffic of the two communities, meaning that West Bank Jewish settlers have another road which theoretically never crosses the road used by Palestinians. But let's go to Bosnia. I'll show you two maps of Bosnia now. One is 1991, which shows the Bosnia at this time, and this is 7 years later, which shows consolidated territories. This, in the case of Bosnia, consolidated territories. And actually these are the last images that I show, and it's the new development from the Netherlands. It's called Haverlei, where in the region of pristine countryside, 220 hectares, there are initiated very beautiful gated communities. And here we go, we have a castle. I just want to say that before we looked always how the rural population invaded cities, but what we see now in population from cities, there is a trend that people go and move to the rural areas. And this is some kind of attempt at this. And in this way, you can have the best of the two worlds, the urban and the rural. Again, like in the West Bank, you are able to look at this untouched landscape, to dwell on it. But you live in a very small community. This community is what it's a new terminology, urban village. And it houses people that share same kind of values. It's also interesting, I'll show you just a few more pics. It's sort of amazing to see that this upper middle class, they show somehow medieval aesthetics with water modes, you know, the water surrounds the compound, And the green area is, as for now, preserved as golf course, so that it would stay like this. See the doorway to the castle? And here, the last image, I believe. Yeah, this is Tirana, the crystal city. There are many in society that moves away from modernist architecture, modern social state, multicultural society, and so forth. It's sort of natural that people congregate in sort of initiative and they live together, like in the case of Havala, which I showed before. But this is an example from Tirana, which is somehow the same strategy. It's called Crystal City. I was 3 weeks ago, I was in Istanbul at a conference called Istanbul Fragmented, and they said that Istanbul now has already 600 similar native communities. So if we consider that maybe the cities in crisis or fast-growing cities have something to tell us, to tell to the slow region of the European Union, so I hope that I showed some of the examples.